This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hi, Carl, I'm Capriotto, the Aftermarket Podcast Guy, and welcome to the 629th episode of Remarkable Results Radio. Scan tools. Who should be the one investing in scan tools? The owner? The technician? How often are you turning away jobs because you don't have the right tool? Does a journeyman plumber need to buy their own tools to do a job? I don't think so. These are all questions that we cover in this episode with Matt Fonslow, Keith Perkins, and Bill Nalu. It's a wide open panel discussion that I believe you'll enjoy, and I know learn just one thing. We're honored to have Napa sponsoring this episode. You know, recognize the power of being locally owned and nationally known with Napa Auto Care co-branding. Members who have completed a co-branding project see an average of 23% increase in repair orders. Napa Auto Care. They back you with a 50% co-op on approved projects. Speak to your Napa representative today. Hey, don't forget that every episode is archived on remarkableresults.biz, so you can use them as a collection of knowledge and wisdom. The key talking points for this episode reside at remarkableresults.biz/E629. Hey, are you following the podcast on your favorite listening app? Well, I hope so. And if not, find one at remarkableresults.biz/app. Hey, a warm welcome to three great friends of mine in the automotive aftermarket, Matt Fonslow, Riverside Automotive, Red Wing, Minnesota. Hello, Matt.
How's it going?
Good, buddy. Bill Nalu's here, Interstate Auto Care, Madison Heights, Michigan. William, hi, man.
Hey, guys.
And Keith Perkins from L1 Automotive Diagnostic and Repair Mobile, right? You got, what, three techs?
Yeah, glad to be here.
And L1 Automotive Training. Good to have you here, Keith. God, I think I've only done one show with you a while back out of Vision. Remember that?
Yeah, it's been a couple of years ago.
And we got to get back together again. So I'm so glad you're here. We're here to talk about scanners. And, you know, I'm big into this anal thing. You know, what's the topic? What's the title of the show? And I think we'll figure it out at the end. Okay, guys? Matt and, of course, Keith are technicians and use scan tools every day. And Bill's an owner, and Bill needs to buy scan tools. So we've got this interesting perspective from William as a guy who's got to shovel the money out. And, of course, Keith, you buy tools because you have a company that needs it. And Matt, you buy them, but you also, I mean, you and Keith use them every day. And you know what value that they add.
Yeah, I buy them out of ego, probably the worst reason to buy anything. But yeah. It's the truth. I do. I believe a lot in capability, that it's if I'm after a market, that I need to have the capability, and there's a strong sales position, strong marketing position by having capability, not just to succeed in diagnosis and repair, but also just to be that shop. And I don't want to say regardless of car line, you know, you might have to narrow that focus just logically, but as many car lines as possible, especially ones not well supported locally, I want to be that shop that you can go to and get full service repair.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I provide mobile services only to shops, directly to shops. I have to focus on the 10%, the 10% that 90% of shops out there can't touch, that they're under-tooled for, usually under-trained, honestly, or under-prepared for, however. Without going too far in a tangent, I would say there's a large percentage of times that it's not really a lack of tooling, but I do rely on that. I rely on them understanding that's what they're calling me for. They, whether it be reality or perception, that I have the tool that they need to have the job done. But that's the part, is to say that I have the tool every time. So that kind of leads with it. And then also, much like Matt said, ego. I want every single tool, even if it adds no functionality over what I have. I got to have it.
Let me do a timeout right now and ask Bill this question. Bill, have you ever used a mobile diag because you lacked a certain tool or scanner?
We have a mobile diagnostician and a programmer in our area. I've actually, it's a good friend of mine I've known for about 20 years now. He's great at what he does. He's the perfect guy to have everything in his vehicle. And he's actually, it's a three-man crew. It's a father and son, and they've got another employee. And so they travel the Metro Detroit area, and they do programming and some diagnostics for shops around town. I want to ask the guys a question about this. Have you guys sat down and figured out what your cost every single time you're pulling this tool out? And before you answer that loaded question, the thing that we have to take into account is it used to be that you would buy this machine and it would sit there and you could amortize the cost of this, right, over a year or two or three or four. Enter subscriptions. Enter $1,000, $1,500 a year, $2,000 or $3,000 a year for software updates. Are you guys keeping track of this stuff when you're looking at this stuff? And I'll give you my own answer after I hear how you guys sort of figure out the ROI on some of this.
$18,710 a year. Yeah, in subscription cost. It fluctuates year to year. Some of them have two-year updates. Some of them I cycle on and off of and not keep up to date every single year.
Bill, is that an outstanding number for you?
I mean, I guess it depends. It depends on how much tooling you have in that service truck. And then I'm assuming you have more than one service truck, right?
We have three trucks, three technicians.
Three trucks. So each truck has to have, I don't know, 80 to 100 grand worth of tools in there, I suppose, right?
Yep. Insured just over $400,000 worth of tooling.
Yeah.
Insurance-wise.
It's some serious money. Nothing. I find nothing forces today's shop owner to start specializing more than this diagnostic world that we're into. And that's, I don't say that in a bad way, in a good way. It just is.
Right.
And to argue against it would be like sitting out there in the middle of the pouring rain and complaining about the weather. It is what it is. Either you deal with what you're dealing with or you're left out in the cold. For us, I'll never forget spending $3,000 on Navistar software on a fleet account that was 10, 15% of our sales. And then losing that account because they went to Isuzu stuff. I thought to myself, man, I will. The next time I ever have to do that, I'm going to get buy-in from the fleet administrator that says, look, I'm investing in this. If you want me to service this in hours, that takes the dealer days to do, then I'm going to need to account for this stuff. I'm sort of like you guys. Even though I'm not a technician anymore, I don't have my problem buying tooling. I just want to know that it's going to go to good use. I'm one of those right. Shop owners that I don't have a problem dumping $5,000 on something in an instant. But God help you, if the heat is up 2 degrees and the door's open and we're wasting money, I don't believe we should be wasting a dime of money because all of that needs to go to good use. That's sort of my philosophy on tooling.
Most successful businesses have already narrowed down cost of operating, and now we're dealing with increasing revenue to fix a problem more than the other. So yeah, we have to pay attention to cost. Don't get me wrong. I mean, but that should be in the initial business plan, making sure cost is within, you know, is your plan set up to where you create revenue at the end of the year? I mean,
mine's an oversimplified version. Mine's way more weighing it, kind of like I do everything, honestly. Certain scan tools cost per use are really, really low because they get used every single day or periodically. There's a lot of purchases I make strictly with the intent of attacking a certain market or trying to get that reputation of being that guy, that shop that can get it done. So making sure I have Otis, which I don't use maybe once a month. And it's not the most expensive tool in the world, honestly, but Volkswagen Audi Otis. Yeah. I mean, it's well-priced, very fair, excellent tool. I have it mainly because sometimes I need the service information more than I actually need the scan tool function. And then in some cases, you know, I'm a freaking superhero because I can pull a radio code, or I shouldn't say pull it, but retrieve a radio code to unlock a radio. And I'm a hero over it. It's hard to charge for it because of what you invest versus use.
Right.
But that goes around. People find out, hey, you know, Volkswagen problems, Audi problems, radio problems. There's this guy, there's this shop. You know, I am not trying to insinuate the ROI is high at all. I might be high when I'm buying some of this stuff. I mean, it's true that I do. I buy a lot of that stuff for one-time use just to be able to do it. Say I did it, talk to Keith about it, you know, and feel like I'm in a conversation.
I do the same, though. I mean, when we jumped into ADOS, we said no three times over the period of 2 weeks. And I was like, that's it. We're going feet first. And just cash dumped on it. I mean, it was a massive investment. But I had the capital. I had planned at some point to invest that kind of money into ADOS. But it was just a 2-week period of we said no three times. And I was like, we don't say no. We're who they call when they can't do it. And we do everything we can to prevent a car from going back to the dealer.
You know, with a just say no attitude, you could probably buy an awful lot of equipment in an independent shop and it collects dust without a good business plan and maybe even a marketing plan behind why you would use the tool and who you would attract.
And I 100% am on the boat of not every shop can afford what I have. I have to service 170-something shops on a regular basis to meet the demand, to meet ROI on these tools. A brick and mortar cannot sustain the tooling I have. You won't see enough of the cars.
This number is slightly fluffed, more so to demonstrate coverage rather than actual hardware. But I think last count, I'm up to 32 scan tools. Very few of them are aftermarket. That's probably not even in it with Keith. Keith probably has me... He might double me up on that.
Do you have a scanner envy?
Yeah, yes and no. But I mean, part of it is I need the stuff to get it done. Like I want the collision jobs, the collision shop jobs. Well, I got to have factory tools. And some of them I get away with a universal interface like a J2534 box or a couple of them. And so then it's really just subscriptions and maybe, you know, I typically buy a dedicated laptop for every car line. You know, right or wrong, whether I need to or not, I've just enough times run into the problem where I got driver conflicts, Java conflicts, and I hate dealing with it. And the price of a laptop is squat. And then I run into situations where the aftermarket tool doesn't get it done for me. And it's not begging on aftermarket tools because it's usually my first grab. But sometimes what I need isn't there, be it a PID, be it it reports a code wrong. You know, the list could go on with that, right? I'm sure the conversation is going to end up OE and aftermarket. It's not so much versus. Yeah. It's just you're going to have a complement of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Matt, question. Is this equipment yours or does this belong to your employer?
Most of them are mine. I take the initial risk because I believe I can create that market or corner that market. And if it works out really well, typically the shop will buy it from me, reimburse me for it, or, you know, or depending on what it is, I might keep it just because I want to be able to go use it whenever I want, you know.
Yeah. How many Matt Fanslows are out there on the market?
Hopefully not
willing
many.
To do?
Oh.
That speaks to my point as a shop owner. I decided some years ago, I said to the guys, I said, in fact, I purchased my head technician Norm had I think it was a Solus or a Zeus or whatever the heck this thing. That's our main tool that we pull out most of the time. I said, I'm going to buy this thing. And then I turned around, I traded it for a brand new unit. And I said, from here on in, and we built out a shop specialty toolbox for inventorying this stuff. And what I realized was every dollar I put into shop equipment tools, specialty tools, including scanners and so forth, I'm effectively giving my technician a raise. That's one less dollar he or she has to spend on tools. Mm-hmm. And the other part of that is I no longer have this attitude where, and rightfully so, if my A tech says, well, why should I train a tech to compete against me? And why should I buy this stuff and have them benefit from it? What do you say to somebody like that? Why in the world should they be doing? Whereas if I buy the tools and I'm updating the software, now it's a shop tool. Everybody gets to use it. And again, that all important ROI for the technician and it's the right thing to do. So you've heard this before. We've talked about this stuff before. No other trade does what we do. Plumbers, electricians. When was the last time an electrician had to buy a $5,000 tool or a plumber had to go get a $2,000 auger or... I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah, an HVAC technician going like, I believe there's duct cleaning to be done, so I'm going to go buy this cleaning unit.
No.
See, I was right. Now they buy it from
you. It's insanity. What we do is insanity. And I think we're in agreement. So what do we say to the average shop owner that says, well, as long as I've got a tech who's gung-ho and he's got an ego just big enough to want to be investing in the Snap-on truck or in the mobile diagnostic truck for the rest of his natural born life, as long as he's willing to do that, whatever, it saves me. I don't have to buy some tools. What can we say to them about how much smarter it is to, you know, when you're paying a technician, I don't know, I'm picking a number here. Let's say the technician's making 80 grand. What happens when they don't have to invest 5 to 10 grand a year or 20 grand a year in tools for that year? Aren't we effectively giving them a raise that year?
Yeah, their expendable income goes up. And then if there's any sort of commission, you know, well, however that works out, I'm not campaigning for any pay strategies or whatnot, but if there is, that makes them more money because they're more efficient because they have a capable and most likely intuitive tool to use to get the job done. If they're fumbling around with, you know, whatever you have, and we could probably start picking on certain tools, but really you're trying to finish this job and there's an adaption required or a calibration of some sort and it doesn't do it, or it's buried in some totally unintuitive place, that costs the tech money, it costs the shop money, ultimately costs the client money. Strong arguments for that, for the shops to look to invest in this equipment to gain capability and usefulness.
I may get myself in trouble with my fellow shop owners, but this is a message that goes out to every technician in industry. If you don't have an owner who's willing to invest in tooling, shop equipment, scanners, the things that you have to have in order for you to be able to generate that all-important gross profit dollars per hour, and if you have sat down with that owner and explain to them sort of what kind of money is sitting out there, and they're not willing to listen, you're probably working for the wrong place. You've got to find somebody, and maybe you've got to reach out to other owners that can speak to this owner and say, dude, you know, you've got a crew here. You've got a, if you're going to have a team of technicians who are going to help each other out, it can't be that these are my tools and these are your tools, and I'll loan you this one today and they'll loan you that one tomorrow. But in the meantime, we're both spending 10 to 20 grand on tools every single year, even though I've got $100,000 in toolbox and tools up here. That's unacceptable. 20-year technician plus still investing thousands and thousands of dollars a year in tools? Can't happen anymore. We're beyond those days. You know, again, maybe I'll get some hate mail tomorrow. We'll see. But maybe to whatever extent, so my shop owners say, well, thanks a lot. You've caused me some trouble. We've got to drive this industry to ever increasing professionalism. Professionalism isn't expecting your employees to buy equipment that you really should have in your facility, especially when it depreciates to the level that it does. Unacceptable.
If you telling other shop owners to invest in equipment rather than asking their employees to causes trouble, they were in trouble to start with. They're on the downhill slide. I use it twofold. I buy every piece of equipment. That is, in every job ad that I've ever put out, it is very largely written as bold as possible that a technician that works for me does not purchase any tools ever for the rest of their career. That is the point. I own all the equipment. I own the vans. I own the phone that they're using to get their schedule on. And it's twofold. Yeah. One, it's a $10,000 to $15,000 a year raise. I get to talk about that when we talk about that. I pay well to start with because of the type of technician I need. But then they also never have to purchase a tool. And I make sure that, you know, that's mentioned during the interview that.
I bet you could even say, what are you still paying the tool guy right now?
Right. Every time. And we do talk about that. That does come up. I'm like, okay, how much do you owe in tools? And I have offered as an option, as an incentive to get a technician to work for me that, you know, I could help with that or alleviate that, because I don't need them owing tool trucks or anything. I own all the tools and equipment. First of all, because it's twofold. I'm like, Matt, I want it all, every one of them. And I want three of them right now. And then soon I'll want four of everything. And it continues on.
You have the attitude, I never, you know, no is not in your vocabulary. And Matt, you're not a no guy either. I mean, you want to do everything that comes to you.
A lot of it was just a fierce belief in service requirements, meaning like I personally, before having certain tools, and we'll just say factory tools to be vague and but accurate, that I was already running into issues where I had to schedule a client to take their vehicle to a dealer to get programming done or do something that I was incapable with the tooling I had to do it. So eventually I just got fed up and, you know, talking to a shop owner and, you know, do you think we'd really use it that much? You know, how often do we really have to do that? If you did this once a month for a year, we still couldn't justify buying the tool. So I got up, you know, I just finally said, screw it. I don't buy a whole lot of hand tools. I'm going to start buying diagnostic equipment. And I had a boatload of scopes. So now I'm starting to buy scan tools. And what I found, and later the shop found, was when people find out you can do things like that, programming and whatnot. And this is long before you know, mobile techs were around, and our town's probably a little small for a mobile tech to survive. But this is probably even pre-John Anello days. Shops locally would find out you can program certain car lines. Next thing you know, it's like, hey, man, can I run this car down? Could you program it? And a lot of it was like they didn't know what was wrong with it. And maybe they threw some parts at it and it didn't work. So, oh, maybe it needs a software update. And that would get you the car or the vehicle, and you would program it and it wouldn't fix it. And then it was, hey, well, gosh, you know, since it's down there, could you, you know, give us an opinion, a diagnostic opinion? And word gets around that you can do that. And it's kind of like a mobilizer. Definitely don't want to get on a tangent here, but people start finding out that you can cut and program keys.
Yeah.
They start showing up. It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. But that was very much what happened with the scan tools. And then lately, this shop owner now, I came to the shop with more scan tools than he had and saw the value, saw how many more, businesses, shops specifically, and collision shops were bringing us work because of it. Now he's kind of a believer in it too. And, you know, from time to time we roll the dice and it collects dust.
Okay, but he is buying now. You're not.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, again, I don't want to stay on a tangent, but like the key programming and cutting stuff, I believed in that wholeheartedly. So I made the initial investment, and I don't think anybody thought would happen what would happen, including me. Yeah. And then when it did, it was very quick to get reimbursed.
I find the same with everyone on that. We have two trucks now that do keys.
Hey, Carm here. And coming up, find out how you get your team up to speed with a new scan tool. Hi, Carm here, and I want to talk to you about the NAPA Auto Care Center program for health insurance. We've all heard the reports about the rising cost of health insurance, but you'll be happy to know I'm here with really good news. The NAPA Insurance Center is now offering the NAPA National Health Program, and it's saving NAPA Auto Care Centers and their employees money, lots of money. In fact, in the first 90 days following the launch of the program, NAPA stores and auto care centers and their employees saved over $2.7 million. That's all thanks to the NAPA Insurance Center's partnership with United Healthcare. It gives auto care centers access to the national large group rates on medical insurance with premiums discounted up to 30%. Now, these rates are based on the collective purchasing potential of 22,500 NAPA locations, including both NAPA Auto Parts stores and NAPA Auto Care Centers. And listen to this. The news just keeps getting better. You can choose from four excellent United Healthcare medical plans with varying levels of coverage and deductibles to meet a range of needs. All plans are PPOs, preferred provider organizations, with comprehensive coverage. Because of the NAPA Insurance Center's partnership with Aflac, you can have access to supplemental insurance benefits, including disability, accident, hospital, and more, all at a NAPA-only discount, up to 35%. The NAPA Benefits Center can help you with other group benefits, too, including group life insurance, retirement, HSAs, and more. NAPA's National Health Benefit Program is just one of the many reasons to become part of the NAPA Auto Care family, the largest network of independent automotive repair shops in the country. Talk to your servicing NAPA store. For more detailed information about the NAPA National Health Program, visit the NAPA Benefits Center at www.napabenefitscenter.com or call the NAPA Benefits Center at 844-627-2123. Matt, your owner is buying the tools now. These are probably scanners that you would have owned. What if the scenario is that you're gone someday? Do you have to go back and reinvest in the stuff you never acquired?
Yeah, definitely. And that's part of the reason I don't want to. But, you know, a situation in my specific case is looking like more and more partnership leading to ownership.
I'm thrilled. I've been waiting for you to say that to me. And all these years I've known you, I am so thrilled to hear that. But Bill, it's a golden handcuff, though, isn't it?
It sure is. When you guys are talking about scan tools, I can't help but use the analogy of the tow trucks. So years ago, we started off with one tow truck. And the company, the big company that we all know, came along and said, you know, you guys are doing such a great job for us. We can give you another territory. Why don't you get a second tow truck? So we get a second tow truck. Next thing is to three territories and four territories. You're up to four tow trucks. And not until the fixed costs that you had counted on that first year of warranty service start to drop off till it starts hurting that, you know, $200 this or $400 that. And all of a sudden, you realize you're under, and between your lease payment and your repairs on this equipment, you're not making any money doing this stuff. And the scanner world seems the same way. As I'm listening to you, Matt, I'm thinking to myself, with all of that you've got invested in software and in hardware, it seems like you can't make money doing that unless you have a mobile business attached to that building, that you have some kind of a, you know, whether it's you or somebody else, gets in the truck and does mobile service. And it can't be like one or two here a day. You've got to have that tow truck's got to be running. We all know of the repair facility that's got a tow truck there that's just basically rotting out in the driveway, right? There's more rust on the ground than there is above the ground. And it's because the thing doesn't get used. And the scanner worlds, to some extent, the high-end stuff, if you don't have it built up, man, you're spending some serious cash on software. Sometimes the software is more, the software is more expensive than the hardware if you're pulling this tool up once every other month or whatever it might be.
Can I reply to what Bill just said? Are you saying, Bill, that if you have a huge investment in scan tools, you have to have mobile service because to pay for the investment?
If I had the tooling that Keith or Matt had, there's no way I would be doing that without having a mobile business attached to it. Such
me
that,
neither.
But I get that. But Matt, they're coming to you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we offer, like, I'll try to do stuff on site, but inevitably, they just end up dropping it off, depending on the situation. Again, I'm not trying to imply that this is like a big moneymaker, and I probably should be better with numbers to be able to present with, you know, I got this job because I have this capability. A BMW that got a headlight put in and they couldn't adapt code the headlamp module. They brought it to me. The customer knows that I have now laid hands on it, coded it, works, boom. Well, now they bring their vehicle back to us because they know we work on BMWs. So now we gain the water pump jobs and the lube oil or service maintenances, stuff like that.
What happens to the shop? ABC Automotive clearly couldn't handle the work. Now they've got to send it your way. Customer knows this. What is the relationship between ABC Automotive, their customer, knowing full and well that the customer is now looking at this and going, look at this pretty lady down the street at Red Wing, you know, Red Wing. Does that cause a problem between your relationship with the referring shop and the customer?
So far, not. The cars we're talking about, for the most part, or the vehicles we're talking about, for the most part, are vehicles they probably didn't want to be working on anyways.
Okay.
For the most part.
I find the same attitude.
Yeah. If they have issues, I mean, I think I have a really good rapport with everybody, and I would say a lot of them are just kind of friendships, you know, more than acquaintances, but not saying I hang out with everybody either, but I feel like if there was an issue, they would call me right away and I would fix it, whatever it took to fix it, because, you know, friendly competition or whatever is very important to me. Like, I want to be competitive with you and, you know, the rising tide type stuff. But I also, you know, it's not worth the zero sum game to me at all.
And they know you're probably not actively trying to acquire that customer. You're not digging through the glove box, getting their info and calling them. I've had some dealers around us do that.
Yeah, I've heard about that
registration
stuff.
Information and call a customer. You're like, it's not how it goes.
All right, guys, I got a question about training. I have this issue in the industry that we have all kinds of software, Bill and Matt and Keith, and we're only using a small percentage of their capabilities, be it even if it's shop management software. We want, but we still don't use the total capabilities of what we can for just about anything. Even if it's a software on your phone, we're not using all of it. You get the scan tool. Do you have to train on your own? Do you get any factory training? Do you get any, you know, whoever sold it to you training? What's the learning curve on this?
To me, it's the power button. And then I guess it's a lot of it's self-taught. A lot of it's, you know, Keith regularly puts up YouTube videos or snippets of longer videos that he has on his site for a very reasonable subscription. And I can watch those. And he'll just maybe demonstrating something, be it a case study on a vehicle, or he's demonstrating the scan tool saying, hey guys, you know, I got my hands on one of these and I've been using it for a few weeks. This is what I've found. I like this. I don't like this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm watching it and I'm learning from that how to navigate the tool. That happens a lot.
I find it two different ways. I think I find that most technicians that have the passion or the drive or the want to get all the tools have a good critical thinking mindset and are pretty intuitive with technology and can navigate through and find what they're looking for. I would say the other end of that spectrum is that most technicians, most shops that I service anyways, they are underusing their tools by a lot. They're under the impression that the tool that I have is the reason why I can do what I can do. In my first year plus of business, I was really concerned about that. I was hiding the tools I was using, thinking, oh man, if they find out this is all it takes, they're going to buy one. I find myself now just walking and going, hey, I know you got a XYZ. Let me see it real quick so I can do this job. And they're not offended by it. I've taught them over this time that, like, look, it's knowledge equipment and more critical thinking and reading service info than anything. And they're learning that. And I'm now using that to drive towards my training business.
That's a really good point. A lot of times learning how to do it is right in service information. Even if it's not the factory tool, a lot of times the aftermarket tools use similar terminology, similar, not always the same, but similar menu layouts to get you close. And then service information kind of directs you. But if you're using factory tools, service information can take you exactly where you need to go. It's right there. That was a really good point.
To step back for a second, my second point I was making on the me buying all the tools, it's a technician retention tool as well. Like the concern that was raised with Matt, if a technician works for me and has all these tools, they understand, I regularly discuss with them what we're missing out. I said, hey, did you get anything that you thought would be easier on the other tool? I have an opportunity to get XYZ OE tool or something that I don't know what OE tool we don't have at this point. But in the beginning, it was, should we get this tool? And we talk about it and we talk about the investment cost. So my technicians are fully aware of what the cost is involved in this. And I think the one particular one that I was teaching to hopefully one day run everything or be my best competition, one of the two, has determined and said verbally many times that he doesn't want the headache, the cost of all this. Of it is a full-time job for me to keep up with three vans, keep all the tools updated, the software, dealing with all of the little nuances, like Matt was saying, having different laptops for every manufacturer. That is a full-time job, having three technicians in this many scan tools. I don't know the number, but Matt's right. I probably have close to 60 software tool.
It's astounding to me. I mean, I already know this, but yet it's still, when you hear it from Keith's mouth, you're not bilingual, trilingual. You got to know 30 freaking languages here. There's 30 operating systems in the trunk of your vehicle. And that's worth a hell of a lot in this industry. And what I liked about what you said was, when you can come in and do the service that they're expecting you to service, and also maybe pique the technician's interest. Maybe he's a B tech. Maybe she's a B minus, whatever it is. Somebody that's there, whoever's really wanting to learn it, you give them a little bit of a taste of what this thing can do for you and say, now, if you're interested in more of this, I can teach you. So if you want to hire me to do this, I can do this. But there's a side part of this where I can teach you everything that I've had to learn. All the investment I've made in time, talent, and treasure is worth this. And so if you want to do this, then I'd be happy to show you how to do this. And this is what it costs. Have you guys thought of maybe a subscription? Well, in your case, Matt, it's not so much with that with Keith, though. Have you thought of a subscription? I know Karma's we're going to be doing an episode at some point on subscription models of doing business. Have you thought of a coupon book, 10 coupons for a discounted price? I hate the word discounting, but you're basically buying this stuff upfront. Here's 10 coupons. And you call me, and it includes all of these models and makes, and it's, you know, for not diagnostics, but maybe programming, 10 programming jobs, and, you know, you buy 8 and you get 2 free, or buy 9 and you get 1 free. Have you considered that?
I went around with a threefold flyer with what car lines I can service, you know, and it's got other stuff in there. It's got programming and key cutting now, and ADOS and fuel injector flow, or at least port fuel injector flow testing and cleaning, stuff like that. And that's what I did to market. Just try to keep my finger on the pulse with it. And like you said, a lot of it too is just my memory. It's like, man, you guys have been bringing us a lot of stuff. Don't worry about it. Yeah, just go. No charge. I haven't done a coupon thing, but I really wanted to say how I love how this has naturally evolved to that discussion about being so multilingual, you know, quote unquote lingual with all these different scan tool user interfaces. Like, there is a lot to that. Yeah. Like, you think about some of it, how non-intuitive it is.
Yeah.
You know, the Ford IDS, to me, it was really non-intuitive for bidirectional controls to be in yeah. the data logger. However, yeah. if you were already familiar with Toyota TechStream, you probably wouldn't have had, it wasn't such a huge leap.
Yeah.
You know, and
like
then
the first time I got my hands on Honda, I was like, oh. yeah, because I'd been using IDS for years and I was like, oh, well, this is familiar. Let's just navigate yeah. through here.
You know, or Otis, Volkswagen Audi Otis, the right click, you know, yeah. that was that. I was getting nowhere on that freaking thing. And somebody's telling me how awesome it is. And I text them like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever used in my life. How in the world do you think this is good? He's like, right click.
Yeah.
Right click. And I right click and it's like, oh.
So there is a learning curve, guys. There is a learning curve. As much as Matt, you discounted it a little earlier. It's, oh, hey, it's easy. There's a learning curve. So the training piece, Keith, you get a new piece of equipment. You sit down with your team. Maybe it's after work and you say, hey, you each have one. Let's go through this. Let's learn it and teach each other. I mean, how are you getting these, your team up to speed?
I go hands-on with the tool first for a little while, unless it's something we're just adding to a truck that we've determined we need more than one of. There are a few tools that we do have just one we share with a communal. You know, this one tool is communalized on a laptop, and that goes with that person or that tech for a day if they're scheduled for one or two or multiple of those jobs. I will use that first for a long time. Now, what's great about most OEs using a Windows-based laptop as their interface is we can put TeamViewer on that. And if I'm familiar with that tool and that technician's not, I can log in and go, all right, now see over here, we're going to click this first. Go ahead and go to that menu and XYZ. I'm able to run them through that. But we do have, we meet once a week. At least once a week for an hour and do a little training thing every week. We were off for vision to do that. My technicians each had an entire day to go back and view live classes on the days they wanted to, along with having an entire day of watching re-recorded stuff. So training's big, but for tooling and equipment, I'm honestly going to say that all my technicians, we have that kind of mindset. So I can kind of unleash them on a tool and they're going to find it. There is some guidance involved, definitely. In the European world, it's real big. So we use Autologic tools. We have a ton of them. And I pay the monthly subscription because I can send a tech support request and be like, I don't know what I'm doing on Otis right here. Can I get some help? And, you know, Martino or Shipley will call me from, all right, let's walk through this. And they'll log into the factory tool and help me. There are stuff out there for that. Most of it is we pick it up, but there are a few nuances of some of these tools and a few things that verbiage is very, very different.
I want to ask a question about specialization. Awful lot of talk about that. You know, you're an Asian shop, you're Euro shop, you're a domestic shop, you're an ADAS calibration shop. I mean, that's, Matt, you guys are totally, for example, and I know you're not, but, you know, diagnostics. Keith, you are specialized because you have the equipment that says we're the expert at making these cars run again and let them run right. Is specialization going to force some in the industry because of the cost of entry of scan tools into that?
I just think pure logic. The specialization can go multiple ways, right? Like, it could be specialization as the shop picks, we're going to service these car lines. You know, however many it is and whichever ones they are, these are the ones we're going to be, you know, we're going to be armed up, ready to go 100% or 95%, whatever.
Service ready.
Yep. We're going to be ready to go on these car lines, and anything outside of that, we'll do what we can or we won't touch them. Or depending on size of the shop, location, all this region, blah, blah, blah. You may have certain technicians specializing in either types of repairs. Like, so mine's electrical diagnostics, programming, stuff like that. ADAS. That's my specialization. It's on anything that comes in the door, but you're probably never going to see me hanging brakes. It just probably is not going to happen. So you might have it divided up like that. Yeah, it would be terrible. I'd probably be in jail.
Flat rate and would kill me.
And brake pads in backwards, upside down, you name it. You might be specialized in certain service areas within the shop, or each tech specializes in certain car lines. So you have the Euro tech, the Asian tech, the team of domestic techs, however, you know, whatever it is. And I could see that too. It so depends, right? But I do agree. I think specialization is, your hand is forced. due to tooling costs, because it's not just diagnostics, right? It's scan tools. Of course, that's what this episode's about. But if you're doing all makes, all models, and you got to do timing chains, yeah, that's a lot of freaking cam alignment tools. Yeah. That's a lot of cam alignment tools. And then you talk about tools that collect dust.
This was a healthy, great, wide discussion. And if you guys want to narrow, let's do part two.
I'm in.
Let me offer you this, Carm. You know, you're our Oprah. You've got more money than Oprah, and you're better looking than Donahue, right? You're our Oprah. If it hadn't been for you, I wouldn't know Matt, and I wouldn't have met Keith at this point, and another 400 shop owners around this country. With that said, I have the ability now that I didn't have 5-6 years ago to be able to reach out to these fellow ladies and gentlemen, as do the technicians have to their industry peers, to the extent that I can, in 5 minutes' time, figure out whether a tool is a thumbs up or a thumbs down. That information is available to me if I'm engaged, if I have my hands on the pulse of where the topic is on this particular, you know, tool or top or issue. And so I guess that's what I would say is, if you're a shop owner, speak to other shop owners in addition to your technicians. Ask them to reach out to industry and say, what do you think here? This is who we are. This is what we think we want to be. Does this make sense? And it's amazing how much great feedback you get, not just from people on the other side of a state, but people in your own neighborhood that says, dude, look, I tried this. I bought this machine. It's been sitting there collecting dust. You want to buy one? Buy mine. I still owe 3 more years on this, right?
Great point. Networking, the power of networking. How about this? How about if we come back and we talk training? How about if we come back and we talk the OOE stuff, Matt, right? And anything else that I know would pop up, because you guys are very articulate, very smart, and very passionate. And that's what our show is all about. Matt, anything? Thanks for bringing this to me, my friend. And you always do. I mean, Matt and I, boy, we speak weekly. You had the fire in the shop. Great episode. People loved it. Matt, thank you for sharing that. Are you guys on track?
They'll start reskinning the outside of the building hopefully next week. The rafters or trusses were supposed to be here last Thursday. They did not show up. So that's kind of slowed things up, but we have concrete poured in certain areas that needed to be replaced for hoists being installed. I think it's kind of hurry up and wait mode right now, and they're going to attack the severely damaged area first, get that almost 100% up and running so that we can kind of move all in there and keep the shop running. Because right now cleaning is, you know, cleaning by displacement. That's what we're doing, is moving it from one area to another to kind of get it out of the way. And we have a couple storage areas filled already, and it's just not enough. It's amazing how much stuff you have.
I had no idea you had a fire. How recent was it?
Episode 617, Bill. Please go listen to it, okay? It came out February 23rd, Matt. I believe you had the fire sometime in January, right? Matt shared, and I've gotten so much feedback on that episode. Thank God I read this. I'm so underinsured. I got $5,000 per toolbox, and it'll just cover the tin. It won't cover anything else that's in it. So guys have called their insurance agencies, completely doing re-reviews of their business and working with local community. That episode could save you peace of mind and all kinds of money. Please, I'm not promoting it for any reason. That's what I do. This is information, insights that will help you. Guaranteed. Episode 617, remarkable results.
And the other part of this insurance thing is, are your technicians' tools covered? Because if you don't cover them in your policy, they're screwed.
That's what he was talking about.
Yeah, that's what I was mentioning, Bill.
We did that years ago. Our policy covers that. And I made sure the guys understood that. It's my responsibility because it's in my building. This is happening. How do you even pick up the pieces when that happens?
I think a lot of owners and managers do not know. They really don't know. And I'm not trashing on anybody. I'm not begging on anybody. I'm not throwing anyone under the bus. You don't think to ask the question because it would never dawn on you. They find out that their employee stuff is wildly underinsured. And then in turn, the employees don't know. So they would never go seek out any kind of insurance coverage for themselves.
Hey guys, thanks. Matt Fonslow, Riverside Automotive, Red Wing, Minnesota. Bill Nalu, Interstate Auto Care, Madison Heights, Michigan, and Keith Perkins, L1 Automotive Diagnostic and Programming, a mobile diagnostic with three trucks on the road, and L1 Automotive Training. I'm sure you can see all kinds of great videos of yours, right?
Oh, yeah.
As promised, we'll get back to you and tell you when we're going to do this this second episode. We'll take this a little deeper. Thanks, guys, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.